Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament, the post-Thanksgiving episode, where we
How was your Thanksgiving?
Dude, my Thanksgiving was pretty great. My parents, every Thanksgiving, they rent a cabin out in the woods, way far in the woods. There's no internet, there's no TV, there's no cell.
What?
There's no cell service, like literally.
What do you do?
Man, it's just good old-fashioned family fighting. And,
oh, good.
Yeah. So my parents and all six of their kids, who are all married and have kids, all invade this place. And it's just like an insane amount of people. And that's what we do. We go down there and we go down there for like 3 days every year. And it's, and I don't mean like we're staying in separate cabins. It's one massive cabin with 10 bedrooms. And the families are all stuffed in there. And that's what we did, but we bring in all the food and all that stuff, and we just eat and drink coffee and hang out and play games and all that stuff for a couple of days. And then you come back, and as soon as you hit civilization, your cell phone goes off like Las Vegas. all the stuff. But it is a weird thing. Like, you might as well just leave it in the room. Like, there's literally no service for anyone out there. And so that's what I did, man. It was good. We do it every year.
It is good. Yeah. Well, we went to some friend's house in New Jersey. Another pastor, his family. He has five kids that are all pretty young. So, you know, it's always good for us. I mean, we don't have family out on the East Coast anywhere nearby. They're all basically all our families in California for the most part. And so, so we have friends that, you know, that we get together with for Thanksgiving. We got together with this family. And it was great because they have five kids. We got three kids, so no one had to be formal or, you know, on their best behavior. Everybody could just go wild. Our kids could be loud. Their kids could be loud. We could eat well. We had a good time. So it's a good week. Wow. I mean, it's a strange thing. Like, Thanksgiving is a slow time, you know, like, because that Friday after Thanksgiving, you just kind of chill. Mm-hmm. Saturday, you know. Is same way. So it was, it's good to get back into the flow of life here.
Again. Yes. Yes. You know what happened right before Thanksgiving?
What's that, Dan? Was there a conference announced?
There was a conference announced. Guys, we can't help ourselves. We got to do it again. It was too good. It was too epic. Yeah. I don't know if you guys caught this, or maybe, you know, you just listen to this podcast and you're not all over the social medias or whatever, but, we did in fact announce that Here We Still Stand. That's going to be an annual thing. If you thought that, you know, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation had come and gone, and that was it, good news. This is an annual thing. We're doing it again next October. We're going to be back in San Diego, same place, doing the conference again. We're going to be looking at the theology of the cross. That's the sub-theme. It sold out last time. I've no doubt it's going to, I mean, it sold out and it was amazing. I have no doubt that it's selling out this time. So if you want to come, you should definitely do it. There's an early bird special. I'm talking about a ridiculous amount of food and everything is included in your ticket. The lineup's just great. Again, I'm super excited that we're going to get to do this again this year. And, looks like for a good many years going forward, Eric.
Oh, man, and we've already got some amazing speakers lined up, some really amazing scholars lined up. I'm excited about the lineup. I'm excited about the event or the venue. The venue for the place is just about as paradisical, if you can use that word, mm-hmm. as it gets. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's right on the bay in San Diego. The weather's perfect that time of year. I mean, it really is something to behold. So I'm looking forward to it again, and I will most definitely be there, as you, dear listener, should try to be as well.
That's right. If you want to see the speaker lineup and dates and you want to register, just go over to the new revamped herewestillstand.org. All the information is there. Registration is open. We would love to see you and hang out. All right, man, we're nearly 5 minutes into this sucker, and we've got seven woes to mow through.
I don't know if we're going to mow through all of those woes, but we'll get through some of those woes. So it's in Matthew 23. It reads like this. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. So do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the marketplaces, and being called rabbi by others. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all brothers. And call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who is in heaven. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Well, if you didn't know before this chapter that Jesus doesn't exactly have great things to say about the Pharisees and the scribes and the teachers of the law, there will be no doubt after this chapter. He makes it abundantly clear they got problems.
Yeah, he's not a fan.
No, not a fan. The things he indicts them for, first of all, so they might say the right things at times. I mean, they sit in Moses' seat. He's saying they might actually read from the scriptures.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction. What he's saying there is, it's not that he isn't saying that everything the Pharisees say you should listen to. What he is saying is that they sit in Moses' seat, that is the seat of the law, and when they are reading from Moses, listen to him.
Right. Yeah, they're the people that are teaching, and when they read from what Moses has written, yeah, listen to what they say.
But that is not to say that when they say all these, when they go off on their own little things and say other stuff, no. Like when they're sitting in Moses' seat, when they're delivering to you the words of Moses, listen. Other than that, disregard them entirely. That's essentially right. What he says here.
Right. I mean, we know this. This is not unfamiliar territory. The Pharisees are guilty of adding all sorts of hundreds and hundreds of laws on top of what Moses had delivered in the law himself. And so minute sorts of laws, too, that as Jesus says, it really became impossible for anybody to do it. And so he implicates them and he says, they don't even do it.
No, like
they preach, but they don't practice it.
No, and I mean, this is like such an indictment that when he says that they tie up heavy burdens, set them on the backs of people, but they aren't going to lift their finger to help them. This is true that when you're in a position of delivering the word of God, which they are, sitting in Moses' seat, that part of your job is to unburden people. And Jesus indicts them for doing the opposite.
That's right.
People are not, like, people's main problem is not that life is not heavy. That's not that they, you know what the problem is here? Is that you guys are all, like, life is just too light for all you guys. What you need is some burdens. that's not the case. And this isn't to say that they shouldn't get there and, like, talk about sin and the Ten Commandments or whatever else they're talking about with Moses, when they're talking about what Moses has said, they should. But the end goal should be, in this case, to talk about the Christ and the Messiah. They're not pointing these. They're trying to. The definition, really, of putting burdens on people is putting the weight of people's own salvation on their shoulders.
And unfortunately, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to our listeners and certainly obvious to us that this kind of preaching and this kind of leader within the church still exists today. The kind of person that gets up there every Sunday basically makes their congregation feel bad, puts heavy burdens on them. They need to do more, try harder, but does not deliver the good news that Christ has done all in their stead for their salvation. They they sort of just leave them there and tie up more heavy burdens on people. And the sad thing is the old man, you know, that our nature actually prefers it that way. We prefer to carry our own burden. Ugh, it makes us feel more righteous if we're really, really struggling and if it's really, really hard. And unfortunately, unless the word of Christ comes to say, whoa, 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 you need to help people carry the burdens they're carrying. You're doing it all wrong. You need to deliver the goods. You need to deliver the one who takes burdens away from them, which is me. We'll just accept it from the pulpit because that's our nature. Our nature is just to go, yeah, give me more, give me more. Until it breaks us, and then we go, forget it. I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Right. The end result of this, there's two results, and you see the Pharisees on one side, the people on the other. The two results are either you become a Pharisee, you become proud, you become arrogant, you become self-righteous because you think that you're something, think you're pulling it off, or you become like...
Or you reject the faith entirely.
Yeah, or you become like the people, and you despair. And you're like, can't do it.
You despair.
Not in the cards for me.
Yeah, Yep, there's not a place for me in God's kingdom because I just can't carry this burden.
Right, exactly. Yep.
And this is what had happened time after time again, and so Jesus is really angry with them because, you know, at least if you're going to give them these burdens, why don't you help them? Well, they're not willing to help them.
No.
And so you get to verse 5, he indicts them even more. They do all their deeds to be seen by others. And he gives a number of areas or examples in which they do this. And so essentially the juxtaposition that Jesus is making here is the only time that you're going to lift your finger to help somebody is if somebody can give you credit for it.
Right.
If it's going to make you look good. But Jesus's kingdom, the ethic, if you will, of Jesus's kingdom is don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. Like you're not doing it for the praise of men. You're not helping your neighbor for, you know, the applause. You're helping your neighbor because your neighbor needs help.
Right. Right.
Done and done.
Yep. That's it. I mean, we're not even to the woes yet. This is sort of the introduction to the woes, and what he does in the woes is kind of flush this out a little bit. Exactly all the ways in which this has happened and how ultimately these are areas in which you stand condemned. I mean, these are God takes these things very seriously. God takes sin seriously, and this is all sin. But sitting in the seat of Moses and then not delivering the goods to people is something that he takes pretty personally.
Yeah, and I suppose before we get to the woes, we should probably clarify what he means when he says, you know, you're not to be called rabbi, you're not to be called father, you're not to be, you know, called instructor. I think it's probably clear, but just in case it's not, this is not saying that if somebody is referred, like if a son refers to his dad as father, that that's wrong. This is not saying that if you refer to your teacher as an instructor, that that's wrong. That's not the idea he's getting across here. The idea he's getting across here is that when somebody takes a title like that in the same spirit that the Pharisees would have taken that title, whether it be rabbi, father, or instructor, which is with a sense of haughtiness and pride and to be exalted among others. That's the idea that he's getting to. It's not that having that title necessarily is wrong in and of itself.
Yeah. You'll see a lot of people, and I mean, we don't do this. Well, I know some people that do this and it's weird, but, you know, so in the Catholic Church, you know, they call priests father and that sort of stuff, right? I don't think that's really what's going on here. I know that some people that, like, because of this passage, that makes them, like, super skittish.
But I don't think that's a proper understanding of it.
No, I don't think so either. Even though I'd be totally weirded out if somebody calls me father. I've had it happen before and it's weird.
I have had it happen before too and it is weird. But I wouldn't get upset because I know what's going on. I know what's happening there. So now we get into the woes, and this is where Jesus gets even a little bit more specific. Verse 13. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, exclamation point. I mean, the way I sort of picture this is Jesus raising his voice with lots of anger. For you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. for you neither enter yourselves nor allow those who would enter to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel across sea and land to make a single proselyte, and when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourselves.
Woo!
That's just that,
fire.
That is rough.
You shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. This is precisely the opposite of the call of the preacher.
Right. Yeah.
The preacher is the one who's called to open the door of the kingdom of heaven to all. And he's saying that their preaching is doing the exact opposite, shutting the door.
Yeah, and there is. I mean, you see this in Christianity, even that there is a vein of Christian thought that certainly believes that the end goal of preaching is to tell people, just how difficult this is going to be, and how the road's narrow. And I remember like going to revival meetings and things like this, and it wasn't like this message of come and receive forgiveness and grace and God is going to welcome you into his family, and like none of, it's not that. It was, I want you to think real hard about this before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Before you make this commitment, because this is going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. Like you're joining the Marines or something.
Yeah. And in truth, Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, precisely, again, the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're talking to beat up, weary people, and then you say, like, are you guys ready to do the hardest thing ever? They're like, no, that is slamming the door in their face, because they're like, no, man, I don't have that in me. Like, I'm about checked out of everything. I have nothing.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, it's not to say in any way that this lessens the words of Jesus about the cost or about carrying a cross or any of those things, to die to yourself. All those things are there. It's preaching them in the right way. Well, I mean, those words are not lessened in any way. It's the problem with them is how they're communicated so often that gets in the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the difficulty of taking up your cross and dying to yourself is exactly that. It's self-death, because what happens in the Christian life is that the Christian life is one lived on in dependency. And so like the hardest thing for anyone to do is not – look, the hardest thing for people to do is to deny – their own righteousness and goodness, their own self-sufficiency. That's the crucifixion of self. The crucifixion of self is the crucifixion and the death of like all of the things that you think you bring to the table, all the goodness you possess, all the righteousness you've assumed and accumulated. That's a difficult thing. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants. At the end of the day, Christianity is a fork in the road. You see this super clear at the crucifixion of Christ, where you've got two guys crucified on either side, and one guy is like, if that's God, like it's weak. Like get down there and save yourself. Like this God is for the weak. It's a weak God. I don't want nothing to do it. The other guy's like, I'm bad. He's good. Remember me. And that's how it works. Like, so like you see, all he does, all that thief does is deny his own goodness and acknowledge Christ. But that is like a vivid picture of self-denial. Like, I'm bad. I'm a bad person. I'm not good. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's all too many voices out there in the secular world and in the religious world that tell you that the meaning is precisely the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's digging into yourself further. It's becoming more self-reliant. You go, this is crazy talk.
The Christian life is you becoming more and more competent.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, man, just talk about a recipe for disaster. But if the Christian life is leaning more and more into the finished work of Christ on your behalf and learning more and more not to depend on your own strength, well, then that just might work.
It might just work. And here's the thing. Like, some people would be like, I don't know, man. That sounds easy. And it's like, yeah, that's the thing, is that that's why he says that he wants to give you rest, because that does sound restful, and why he wants to make your burden light, because that does sound light. But it's also why he says you have to die to yourself and take up your cross, because if you think like self-denial and denying like all the goodness in you is just no big deal, like you just don't know very many people. That is painful, and that is hard. And so it is both.
That's where the hardship comes from.
So it's both, man. It is both. It is light, and it is easy, and it is restful. But dependency on another, the denial of your self-sufficiency is a rough deal. It's a crucifixion, and it's a daily crucifixion, because every day you wake up being like, I feel pretty good about my abilities today.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and pretty soon you realize you were wrong. Mm-hmm. And here's he goes even further. You travel across sea and land to make a single proselyte. So they got great missions. They got a great missions program going on, spreading like crazy. And when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourselves. Ugh.
Yeah.
Man.
You know,
heaven forbid, God forbid that our mission work turns into anything like that. Ugh.
Yeah, and people be like, well, what does that mean? Here's what it means. When somebody converts to something, like that's when they're most zealous. That's when they're all about it. The new convert, right? To whatever it is. Doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be the new convert to Christianity, it can be the new convert to Islam, it can be the new convert to essential oils. It doesn't matter. Like they are like a rat on a Cheeto. They are just about it. And so these guys, they go over land and sea, and when they get someone to convert to this warped, crazy religion they have going on, like he goes out and like just evangelizes everyone with this same false message, this same burden. The same burden piling on, the same slamming the door of heaven shut. And we see this clearly in Paul, who was proselyte of the Pharisees. Dude was like up-and-coming rock star Pharisee, and nobody was more zealous to destroying the work of Christ than him.
That's right. This is how cults spread. I mean, anybody ever wonder, like, man, how does a cult grow when it seems so crazy to me on the outside? Well, this is how it grows. You get a few zealous young followers, young converts, and they are able to get others that are feeling sort of lost and not sure about what's real and what's not. And that's always the way it goes. And essentially what Jesus is calling these guys who are so proud of their traditions that are hundreds of years old, thousands of years old by this time, saying, yeah, you guys are basically running a cult. And so you can imagine like their faces right now. Like the anger is seething, but he's not done. There's a long way to go in the woes. We're just getting started, and I don't think we're going to be able to get through the rest of them today. Yeah, how much time do we have left?
5-6 minutes.
Okay, we can get through one more then.
Okay.
Yeah. So he says, woe to you blind guides who say, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools! There's no mincing of words. For which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men! For which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that this is how legalism works.
It never changes, Dan. It never changes.
It doesn't. So legalism works like this. It's a bunch of rules with selective loopholes.
Always. Always.
So it's, well, look, if you're going to make an oath, there are different kinds of oaths, okay? So if you make an oath on the altar, you should probably keep it. But you're not bound to it the same way that you'd be bound to it if you made an oath on the gold on the altar. Now that is, that's...
But this is, I laugh at this, but this is so often the way things are done.
I remember, dude, straight up, this is straight up. I grew up in a fairly, rigorous atmosphere, and I had friends that grew up in an even more rigorous atmosphere. And I remember I brought a Stephen Curtis Chapman record over to one of their houses once, which is not heavy metal, for those who don't know. But and we were listening to it, and this kid's dad came down there and was like, "What are you listening to?" And we're like, I was like, "Oh, it's Stephen Curtis Chapman." And he's like, "Is there drums in that?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, what beat is it?" And I was like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Is it a 4/4 beat?" And what he was trying to do was, drums were okay only in, like, so, like, certain beats.
It was a waltz.
Yeah, certain beats were okay. Other beats were not, like, and so, like, there's this weird legalism where, like, you could, like, yeah, you can listen. Drums are bad, but they're not always bad. And it was just insanity. And that's how this stuff works. Just insane rules with, like, insane asterisk footnotes to try to it's just nuts, man. It's like, it's the same kind of thing when you do this, like, hey man, gossip's terrible, but if you're asking for prayer for someone and you need to divulge a little info, there's sort of a loophole where you can get your gossip on piously.
I remember coming across this and being a participant in this kind of thing. It was so often in my life, and probably still today, even sometimes unknowingly, where, you know, you find these little loopholes here and there, but I can remember in youth group when I was a youth leader and being asked by youth group kids, like, so, you know, like, how far can I go before it's lust?
Right.
Like, well, what do you mean? How far can you go? Well, can I, like, you know, can I French kiss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, are you lusting? Well, I think I can hold her hand and kiss without French kissing, and it's not lusting. But I think if I put my tongue in her mouth, then it is lusting.
Oh, dude!
Like, just stop it, man! Don't touch the girl. You're going to lust after her.
Dude, I remember, like, somehow, like, convincing myself, like, in the younger days, that, like, there's definitely degrees here, and, like, you could do, like, basically anything but one thing, and, you know, and it wasn't the. It wasn't the same. That's what it does, man. Like, when
that's what legalism does. Legalism always lets you find a loophole. It's like in numerous parts of Israel where you have a Gentile elevator and you have a Jewish elevator. Jewish elevator on the Sabbath stops at every floor. Why? Because in Judaism you can't touch the button on the Sabbath. You would be using electricity that would be seen as a violation of the Sabbath. So what happens oftentimes when someone goes over there who's a Gentile, many of the Jews need to get up to their floor, but they don't want to go. They don't want to have to stop on every floor. So they wait until a Gentile comes to get on the elevator, and then they have the Gentile push all the buttons for them for their floors so they don't have to automatically stop. It's loophole. This is everybody. Everybody looks for the loophole when you're a legalist.
Yeah, and so what Jesus is doing here is basically saying that in your, like, trying to nuance and parse out all of this law and all this law that you've added to the law, you've essentially destroyed the law.
That's right. The law needs to be taken 200 proof, full shot. It can't be diluted. And this is the legalist problem, is that they dilute the law.
Yep. Every
they
time.
Try to make it manageable, and in fact, it's the one who says, this is so impossible, no one can do it, that person understands the law.
That's right. And that's it, man. We're out of time. We did not get through very many woes. I do think that we will finish the woes next week. We'll get through the rest of them. But yeah, Jesus is lighting them out. And you know, this is a good thing because like what you have is you have Jesus really standing between these Pharisees and the people. And he's essentially
what he's doing is saying, I'm here to save these people that you have oppressed.
Yes, he's essentially
on the side of the oppressed.
He is essentially stiff arming these guys and saying no more. Like you are shutting the door to heaven in the face of those who I have come for.
And I'm the door to eternal life, and I'm opened.
That's right. That's right. Amen. Eric, we'll pick it up next week.
All right. Thanks, Dan.